Former Pope Benedict XVI passed away this weekend at the age of 95. He's now lying in state in St. Peter's Basilica at the Vatican, where thousands have flocked to pay their respects.
Born Joseph Ratzinger in Germany, he was ordained into the priesthood in 1951 and was chosen to succeed John Paul II in 2005. 8 years later, he shocked the world with news that he was stepping down. John Allen is the author of The Rise of Benedict XVI and head of Crooks Catholic Media and reports on the Vatican and the Catholic Church. He spoke recently with Here and Now's Scott Tong.
Before Benedict was Pope, he was Joseph Ratzinger, born in Germany. Tell us about his early priesthood and theology, what he became known for.
Well, so Joseph Ratzinger grew up really in the shadow of Nazi Germany. He was briefly and forcibly a member of the Hitler Youth and then later the German army, actually ended the war briefly in an American prisoner of war camp. But through all of that, felt a strong vocation to the priesthood. And as soon as the war ended, resumed his studies and quickly distinguished himself as a rising star in the universe of European Catholic theology, the kind of academic study of Catholic teaching. By the late 1970s, Pope, now Saint Paul VI, named him the Archbishop of Munich. And early in the papacy of Pope, now Saint John Paul II, he was brought to Rome to become the Vatican's doctrinal czar as the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith.
Backing up a little bit to explain a little bit more, I mean, I guess for much of his life as a theologian, he was a defender of church orthodoxy, as you describe, supported by theological conservatives in the church. Do you have an example or two to share on that?
Sure. When then Cardinal Ratzinger was the head of the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, there was no significant controversy in Catholicism in which he was not a protagonist. It was Cardinal Ratzinger who in 1986 presided over the issuance of a doctrinal document describing homosexuality as intrinsically disordered and leading one into a situation of grave sin. It was then Cardinal Ratzinger who put the brakes on the liberation theology movement in Latin America. That was a movement in the 70s and 80s that sought to place the church on the side of the poor in struggles for social change and that critics saw as sort of baptizing socialist revolution. And on virtually every other issue, from women's ordination to clerical celibacy, Cardinal Ratzinger would be seen by critics and allies alike as probably the preeminent defender of Catholic orthodoxy in the last 100 years.
As far as the clerical sex scandals in the church, and before he was Pope, Joseph Ratzinger, did he blame that on the sexual revolution of the 60s? Is that how he tried to understand it in his view?
Cardinal Ratzinger, I think, had a very interesting sort of learning curve when it came to clerical sexual abuse. When the scandals first erupted, Cardinal Ratzinger profiled as kind of yet another senior Vatican official who just didn't get it, who was tempted to see all this as a kind of media conspiracy against the church, and also saw it as a kind of outgrowth of the mistakes of the sexual revolution of the 1960s, a kind of permissive anything goes ethos that also infected the church. But not long after that, John Paul II adopted, under pressure from bishops in the United States and elsewhere, a new system for handling sex abuse cases, which centralized the response in Cardinal Ratzinger's office in the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which meant that he had to read all of the case files for every credible accusation of sexual abuse lodged anywhere in the church. And by all accounts, that experience of spending countless hours reading victim testimony produced a real sort of sea change in Joseph Ratzinger. And he went from being a key figure in the denier camp to being the captain of the reform camp. And as Pope, he essentially wrote zero tolerance into the law of the universal church. He promoted an aggressive response to expelling abuser priests from the priesthood. Also became the first pope to apologize in his own name for the abuse crisis, the first pope to meet with victims, which he did in the United States in 2008.
Wow.
Now, of course, critics will say that he left a great deal of unfinished business, but I think there's no question that by the end of it, Pope Benedict XVI was much more committed to reform on clerical abuse than certainly at the beginning of his journey.
He became Pope Benedict XVI in 2005. He was Pope until 2013. When you think of that 8-year stretch, what were the defining moments in his papacy?
I think the papacy of Benedict XVI was very much a light and shadows exercise. He remains arguably the preeminent Catholic theologian of the last century, and there were great teaching documents in his papacy that I think will echo through the ages, but at the same time, it was a papacy just mired by breakdowns in governance, you know, mishandling of sensitive situations, almost boneheaded failures in basic administration. I mean, from appointing a bishop in Germany, an appointment that had to be retracted immediately when it turned out that he had blamed Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans on the hedonism and sexual libidinousness of people in that city, to the rehabilitation of a Holocaust-denying traditional bishop, to the Vatican leaks scandal, and on and on. I suspect the cumulative weariness, that inability to make the trains run on time, is part of the reason that Benedict XVI chose to step down.
Now, popes tend not to step down, but he did in 2013, the first pope in 6 centuries. He said at the time it was due to advanced age. In many ways, Pope Benedict and his successor Francis had contrasting views, didn't they?
Oh, very much so. I think, you know, the truth of it is that if we press beyond the politics of left v. right, the things that Benedict and Francis would agree on are probably deeper and more profound than their differences. I mean, they would both agree that God is a trinity of persons. They would agree that Jesus was the divine Son of God who died on the cross in order to ransom humanity from its sinfulness and open the gates of salvation, things like that. But, you know, when we get to the hot button issues in the Catholic Church, things like the role of women, how much energy should be put on defending the poor and immigrants versus fighting abortion and gay marriage, those kinds of questions. You know, there is no question that Pope Benedict XVI represented a more conservative, orthodox, traditional position. Pope Francis represents a more liberal, progressive, reform-oriented position. But the Catholic Church is composed of 1.3 billion people all over the world. It contains within itself, you know, lots of conservatives and lots of progressives. And there's always going to be this oscillation between one or the other instinct at the top of the church.
And finally, John Allen, what will you remember about Pope Benedict, Joseph Ratzinger, the person?
I don't think there was any public figure in the 20th century where the contrast between the public persona, that is the narrative around that figure, and that person's private personality was as dramatic, as sharply differentiated as it was with Joseph Ratzinger. I mean, the public mythology is that he was this stern, aloof, arrogant, dictatorial figure, right? Kind of the Darth Vader of the Catholic Church. But I am telling you, in private, you would never meet a nicer guy. He came off as shy and humble and kind and gracious and infinitely gentle. And because I had the privilege over the better part of 25 years of spending a fair bit of time with him in person, that certainly is how I will remember him, as this person who publicly was perceived as a bull in a china shop, but on a private basis was just one of the sweetest and kindest people that I've ever known, despite the fact that he was probably the smartest person in every room he ever walked into in his entire life.
That's John Allen. He is the author of The Rise of Benedict XVI, and he's president of Crux Catholic Media. John, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Scott.